Welcome to CFO Talk. I'm your host, Steve Rosewald, Chief Learning Officer at CFO.University. Joining us today is Dave Bookbinder, a business valuation expert, author of the new ROI, Return on Individuals, host of the Behind the Numbers show. Last year, Dave delivered a Finex talk, Human Capital, Evaluating Our Most Valuable Resource, that resonated deeply with the finance leaders who joined us at the summit. Today, we'll talk more on human capital leadership. Dave, it's great to have you on the show.
Steve, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, last year, you know, people really enjoyed your talk on human capital and evaluation, how important human capital leadership is. And you kicked off your Finex talk. How did you say it? You said the oft-quoted line that CEOs say, people are our most important asset. And you pointed out that companies really invest in assets like buildings, but they still treat people as expenses. So you kind of called out the CEOs for not really being genuine in saying that statement. You know, in this day and age of enlightenment, why do we still treat people like expenses?
And to be fair, I'm not calling out all the CEOs on the planet. They do all say that people are this company's most valuable asset. And when I say they don't always behave in ways that support that, part of the reason is because they may not fully understand what it truly means to demonstrate that your people are your most valuable asset in terms of building an effective culture. The other problem, which is the accounting issue, is that unfortunately, and I go into the talk, people are not recorded on the balance sheet. Human capital gets buried into a goodwill asset in what's called a purchase price allocation. And just a fun fact for the folks who are watching here, you're only recording intangible value if it's being acquired. So when we're valuing an assembled workforce, it's only for the target company that's being acquired. It doesn't even give consideration to the value of the workforce for the acquirer. So when you have those accounting mechanisms in place, it's really easy to see that people truly are treated as expenses in the form of salaries and benefits.
All of a sudden, I want to throw a curveball because, and we didn't talk about this before, but then how do you value your valuation expert? So valuing human capital, how do you do that when a transaction is taking place?
We use what's called a cost to replace method. And the idea there is that the workforce is basically it's cost to replace it. So it considers things like recruiting costs, a learning curve, training, things like that. So the direct costs, it doesn't include indirect costs. It doesn't include things like engagement. It doesn't include the intangible within the intangible. So for instance, is it possible that somebody who's been with the company might be worth, or somebody who's been with the company for say 10 years might be a more valuable employee than somebody who's been with the company for say 6 months, just for argument's sake. The person that's been there for 10 years understands the nuances of how the operations work. When the boss gives them a look, they know that's not the day to ask for funding, those kinds of things. And certainly, I think we'd all agree that an engaged workforce is worth more than a disengaged workforce. So I think if we can find ways to include those components into our workforce valuation, that would certainly improve to enhance the way we're thinking about it.
Well, that's an interesting point. So I think you did mention that last year that, hey, the way we value people still isn't right. So even when we try to value from a valuation perspective, we're not doing it right.
Yeah, and I think fundamentally, it all comes back to the main point that people don't appear as a line item on a balance sheet. Early in my career, human capital was a line item on the balance sheet, and we spend a lot more time valuing that asset than we do today.
Yeah, that's a good point. Say, we love this, and if I can share for a second, we'll see this Venn diagram that you put together that I thought was just, really a good way to look at this whole thing, kind of tying these pieces together. Mm-hmm. Can you talk us through this a little bit and how companies are growing their human capital circle to achieve balance within these other two circles?
Yeah, so this Venn diagram, funny story, when I did my very first talk on the new ROI, I was trying to figure out a really kind of a mic drop way to end the conversation, something that wasn't the, are there any questions, And mm-hmm. What fell out of my mouth ultimately became a quote that's been shared around the world. And it's basically that the value of the business is a function of how well the financial capital and the intellectual capital are managed by the human capital. So I put that star in the middle because that's kind of the sweet spot. That's where the magic happens, because the human capital are managing those other two forms of capital. So it isn't necessarily about growing the financial capital piece. It's really focusing on that intersection where they all come together.
You're a valuation expert. So if you look at this, is there industries or is there companies where one or two or three of these stand out versus one or two or three of them not being managed very well?
Well, so I'm a little bit biased here. I kind of think the human capital is where we need to focus our attention because, like I said, it drives the others. But in one of the talks that I think that you've done, and I've included it in some of mine, we talk about the growing importance of intangible assets in terms of the overall composition of the S&P 500 over time. And back in the early days in the 80s, I think it was something like 80% or 90% of the S&P 500 was comprised of tangible assets, right? Machinery, real estate, things like that. And now you flip the calendar to 21, I think we showed it was completely, the script was flipped to make about 90% intangible for the S&P 500. So intangible assets are the preponderance of the value creation in business acquisitions and frankly, day-to-day operations. And it's driven by the human capital.
You look at the whole balance sheet is driven by human capital, really, directly or indirectly. But that whole, the idea that, you know, the people you bring in there, that what they bring with them is really what makes a company.
There's all kinds of empirical studies, Steve, you know about them. And I'm sure the audience is hearing more and more about them each day, about documented evidence where the companies that do well by doing good really are doing well. You know, putting a people forward kind of a culture and environment and focus, they're outperforming their peers.
You talk about leadership and how it inspires engagement and things and how important engagement is. What can we focus on to grow engagement more successfully within our companies?
There's probably a lot of different ways to come about that, but I'm going to give you one that has particular resonance with me based on some conversations I've been having recently with some folks who are in the adjacent space of trying to figure out the correlation between certain intangible components and business performance. And the one that resonates most is appreciation. So companies that demonstrate their appreciation for their employees are outperforming their peers by a good margin. And when you think about that, folks inside the workforce want to feel like they're part of something bigger, a bigger mission than just making the widgets or whatever the company's product or service line is. And if you feel appreciated, you're more likely to probably provide that discretionary effort, the going above and beyond. That's what drives innovation, it drives profitability, and that's what ultimately is accounting for the outperformance on the stock price or valuation.
How do we create a culture of engagement within our companies? You know what, and I don't want to, you know, tick off boxes. I don't know if that's the right way to approach it, but what can we do to create a culture of engagement with our people?
I'll give you two things. One, it starts at the top and it's got to be an intentional focus on doing that. Number two, I think it's training. I mentioned in the talk that the average age when a manager or someone becomes a manager is 31 in the US. And the average age when they get their first management training is about a decade later. So basically, they're on their own to try and figure it out, oftentimes following the lead of folks who weren't trained well either. And that's where probably a lot of the mistakes are made.
Company I started with, Cargill, long years ago, they put me through a management training program when I started. I hadn't even been out of school. But getting a management training program when I became a manager never happened, right? The expectation is if you've done well in your individual job, that you're going to automatically do well as a leader and a manager. And that's not necessarily the case.
You're spot on. I mean, I've seen it in professional services and in the space that I play in and all the adjacent services that go along with what I do. And when someone does really well with their technical toolbox, they advance to that manager title. And oftentimes they're given leadership responsibilities, but there's no really training that's commensurate with that. Yeah, that's where we fall short. But back to your question, though, I think it starts at the top and it's got to be an intentional focus. Every CEO that I talk to has said that it starts there and they've got to make sure everybody drinks the Kool-Aid, so to speak.
Well, you know, being a training and development company, I guess we should really buy into that. That's great. I should probably ask you a bunch more questions on that topic.
Because how much time do we have, Steve?
To summarize all this up, and again, encourage people to watch your Finex talk as well, tell us about the new ROI.
The new ROI is the return on individuals. It's an idea that was born basically from the idea, again, I'm a valuation professional who's valued human capital my entire career. I was also a single dad for a bunch of years. And I think I mentioned in the talk, I worked for some great people. And for those folks, I would walk through fire for them. I was really engaged. They got all my discretionary effort. And there was a different feeling than when I worked for some of the folks who will just say didn't quite get it. it started with an article, and that's really all I intended to do, was just kind of write an article about how we value human capital and maybe make the subtle point that we could do a better job at it. But people started to show up, and they told me that there's something more here, you've got to keep going. And it became a series, and ultimately it had to come together in one place cohesively so that it was kind of a compendium. And that meant, okay, I guess it's going to be a book. And ironically, after not intending to write that book, there's another one coming soon.
Well, I was going to say that you literally wrote the book on the new ROI, Return to Individuals. And I've had a chance to read it. You know that it sits in my, we have a fake background today, but it normally sits in my view, in my Zoom view, because I'm really proud of it. And I think I'm proud of, practicing what you preach in that book. So it's really a worthwhile book for anybody who's, interested in managing human capital or talent. I think it's a great book.
Yeah. So what Steve's not telling you folks is that he's going to also be in book number two, New ROI, Return to Individuals. Going behind the numbers, there's a great conversation with your host here. So check that out when it drops.
That wraps up today's CFO Talk.